Hello, I'm Jeremy Rivera, your unscripted podcast host. I'm here with Tom Fox, who's going to introduce himself and focus on the elements of his history and past that makes him a credible and trustworthy source of advice and guidance.
Wow, I have never been introduced like that. I may have to reevaluate my entire persona now. I'm Tom Fox. I am a lawyer by professional training, so please don't hold that against me because I'm the founder of two podcast networks. And what I really wanted to visit with you today, Jeremy, is why I think every solo entrepreneur, every company, every business owner, every person interested in their own personal branding or even telling a story should have a podcast. And I hope to maybe visit with you about what I see as the power of podcasting and how it can be used literally to allow you to become your own media company and take it wherever you want, even if you didn't know it at the time.
Absolutely agree. I had this conversation with Matt Brooks of SEOteric, one of my friends who has an agency, about kind of the sleeper hit. Like, there's kind of an unappreciated aspect of podcasting as to its strength right now in digital marketing because it's one of the few refuges of honest communication between two humans.
That is an absolutely great way to put it. I've never phrased it like that, but I'm going to purloin your phrase and use it
Maybe
going
so.
forward.
I give you rights in perpetuity. Since you're a lawyer, I could write that down in an email so we have a more than a verbal contract on that.
Well, you're lucky because verbal contracts are enforceable in the great state of Texas, so we're good to go.
How about Tennessee? Because I'm in Tennessee. Does it have to be in both states? Or if you're in one state and it's legal there, can I transfer rights? Or if it's not good in Tennessee, are we?
It's good for me in Texas, so if it's good for me, it's good for you.
Tell me a little bit about your connection to podcasting as kind of a background, some of your experience that's, led to you creating podcasts, and then that can kind of dive as a journey into how you see that that value is derived.
So as I mentioned, I'm a lawyer. In 2010, I started a solo practice in a very niche area of anti-corruption compliance on an international basis. I started blogging to generate marketing for that consulting practice. In 2010, it was a natural extension to move from blogging to podcasting. So I started podcasting. I was the first podcaster in my flavor of compliance. And in 2017, I got the bright idea that what the compliance arena needed was a podcast network. So I went around. There were three major trade groups at that time in my arena, and I went to each one of them and I said, look, let's form a JV. We'll do a podcast network. We will put all our podcasts in the network. It will not take away from one thing you are doing. It will be adjacent to and supplement all of your work, all of your training, all of your written materials, books, publications, et cetera. And by the way, we'll corner the market on advertising. Not that I would ever suggest anything anti-competitive. And two reactions were, what's a podcast? And the third one was, not interested. So I basically said, bleep it, I'll do it myself. So I did. And so I putzed around a couple of years, and my vision was I knew I would never have large numbers podcasting in that niche of an area. And
Yeah.
back then, the magic number to get advertising dollars was 30,000 downloads. I was never going to have that. But I thought maybe I could have 10 podcasts at 3,000 downloads. And I thought that was doable. So I just started begging, borrowing, paying people to come on my network. I mean, I paid my daughter, who was in college, to do a podcast. Anyway, I putzed around for a couple of years. In 2019, I decided I either had to move it to hobby status or fully commit. So I quit practicing law. Committed to podcasting, bought all the cool toys you see, built a huge, and I mean huge network. And at the end of the year, I'd made about $10,000. And I thought, well, that was an interesting experiment. I guess I have to go back to practicing law. And so I did in 2020 for 3 months till they shut the country down for COVID. And so I was putzed around and tried to figure out what I was going to do. And literally on May 15th, that year, I started getting calls from every product provider in the compliance space with the same question: how long do you get access to your network? Because up until that time, all marketing was done in person. Trade shows, conferences, breakfast roundtables, luncheons, dinner events. Just had that tradition. And of course, that was not available. So I was in the anomalous situation. I had people with money to spend and nowhere to spend it. And I had a place they could spend it. And so because of all the work I had done the year before, the answer was straightforward and the same. How long to get access? 24 hours. It was just a drop and drag or a plug and play. I already had the largest social media presence in compliance, so I had what they needed. And my numbers went from 110,000 downloads across the whole network in June of 2020 to 250,000 by August, and with associated increase in income. So my little world blew up. I got on the back of that tiger and just rode it as long as I could. And then I decided, well, let's see if we can actually, you know, build a real business around this growth. And so since that time, I've focused on building that network out and capitalizing on what started back then. I lived in Houston for 40 years. And in 21, we moved to bought a ranch in rural West Texas. And so in 22, I started a regionally focused rural podcast network. And there, the goal was to see if we could bring social media marketing to businesses in small towns, because the closest town I live to, no TV, no radio, 3 day a week newspaper. The county is 38% over 65, but they're all on Facebook. So I wanted to see if, you know, the car dealership, the Ford, the Chevy, the barbershop, the plumbers would come on my network and talk to their audiences where their audiences were. So I have the two networks, different business models, but just telling stories.
So when you're coming to a small business and talking about podcasting, what's in the current environment? Because, you know, since that time, we've now seen the toys roll out. Oh, ChatGPT can do everything for your marketing. Then realizing, you know what, it can, but it can't do it very well yet. And we also have the advance of, you know, more advanced video capability and coming out of AI, Nano Banana, Midjourney, and others coming out with those types of things. What's it like coming into a business space and saying, hey, you know, you should try podcasting. Here's the benefits. What's your elevator pitch for most of these conversations?
There are five reasons for every business to have a podcast: thought leadership, client development, audience engagement, sales, and social media marketing, or marketing collateral creation. And you can get all five of those with a podcast. And that you, there's not one other medium that will give you all five with the pop, but it's as much as important as that is. The part you started with this podcast was authenticity. That's what makes podcasting different. And I didn't understand the science behind it until the last couple of years, but 10 years ago, I'd be at a conference and someone would say, I recognize your voice, or, not to sound completely weird, you're in my head every morning, because they're listening to me because I do a daily news show. And so there's something about the audio communication format that's different than every other form. It's different than video. It's different than written. And it interacts with the pleasure center of the brain, amazingly enough, where video doesn't. And I just learned that a couple of years ago. But if you hear someone's voice, it gives you greater credibility and they will trust you more, as opposed to a video. So that's Nana Banana or just, you know, Tom and Jeremy talking. So the podcast format has that unique. Plus, you can always listen while you're doing something else, you know. Driving a car, walking a dog, going to the gym, having it running in the background, whatever it may be. But that's, it's the collateral definitely that you create that then you can use for other types of media. And it doesn't take away from anything that you're doing. It just supplements all of that. And the five different reasons to do it, if you and I had to say we're going to be a thought leader in this field, well, we talk to other thought leaders and people enjoy that. If you want to get a new customer, if you email them up and say, my name's Jeremy Rivera, I'd like to talk to you about my consulting business, like to schedule a call. They may or may not respond, but if you email them and say, my name is Jeremy Rivera, I have a podcast. I'd like you to come on my podcast and talk about yourself. You get 100% response. Everybody wants to come on and talk about themselves. If you want to build a community, I've had people in my network who started podcasts who have literally built worldwide communities because of the engagement around their podcast. I've already mentioned the creation of social media marketing material or other marketing material, and you can sell. I was the best I ever heard. A woman has a software company in the compliance space, and she was interviewing a client. And in the middle of the podcast, the client said, well, you know, I wish your tool did X. And without missing a beat, she goes, we have developed that. We'll be rolling that out next week. You'll be the first to get it. And I just went, that was the smoothest sales I have ever seen. He just got upsold on his own podcast. Brilliant. So you can do that too. And for me, I tell people I have two metrics only for a successful podcast. Number one, how much did I learn? And number two, how much fun did I have? And I'm at the top of my profession, but guess what? I always learn something in a podcast. I've already learned something from you, but it's because you and I are different. We have a different perspective and we see things differently. But the second part is, if I'm having fun, I'm engaged. And that's what listeners want. They come for the guest and they stay for the host. Well, if Tom is having fun and he's engaged and he lets his drawl slip a little bit and talks like a Southerner, people like that, you know? And so that's really, for me, what it's about. It's that engagement, because if I'm having fun and I'm learning, I know my audience is having fun and they are learning as well.
I think that's true. And I can speak to that from my own experience coming from a professional background in marketing in the digital side, SEO consultant now for 19 years. And so I've been through multiple generations of people trying to create content that pleases the search engine, that pleases the end user, that ends up driving revenue. And, you know, while there are people that are hailing the arrival of LLM tools, you know, you can create so much more content. The reality is that, you know, it's already been trained on pre-2015 content, and everything after 2015 is tainted. They think that something up to 70% of digital marketing content you find on the internet, on websites, has been touched or somewhat sourced by LLM tools at this point. And I call it the digital marketing Ouroboros, you know, that snake that eats itself. We're reaching that point of saturation where now second and third layer tiers of information, you know, the original source kind of used early LLM tools. Then it got added to a database. Now it's been spit up into this article, then secondarily referenced again. So genuine, true data and information is actually limited in the core database of Perplexity, ChatGPT, even Gemini. So they then refer to and add a second layer of, if it's not in that original database, they go and do a Google search. Well, you know, a lot of those results are generated or supported by those sites that are ranking. A good portion of them are using GPT-based skills to generate that content. So from my perspective, podcasting, these human conversations, is the final frontier of information gain. It's the strongest pipeline of new expertise, experience, authority, and trust on a layer of content coming into the internet. Every interview that's done, it's like 100% new, because it is those two, you know, it's like creating a baby, you know, it's two halves, two different sets of genetic code that come together. And for this time being, it creates this unique event in time and space, the overlapping of my experience, your expertise, my experience, my trust, your trust, all of that happens in this, 30 minutes, 1 hour conversation. And that is incredibly powerful for digital marketing if it's harnessed. The sad thing is how many people I know that have done interviews and they haven't done more with it. You know, they've had really good podcast interviews, but they've never turned around and thought, oh, you know what? That's actually 4,000 words worth of content. And, you know, even last year, you would have to pay $400 or $500 to a quality good writer to get that much content, even for a 1,000-word article. And you can turn repurpose, reuse sections of text as blog posts. You can take direct quotes, supplement your about pages. You can feed your social media. I'm looking at it for holistically, as well as how it can potentially impact the other side of the AI question of, you know, how do I show up in LLMs? How do I show up in ChatGPT? What's the process behind that? Well, part of that's authority, placement, trust, and, you know, interviews like this are part and parcel, can be an engine for driving that visibility. So I guess you could label that as number six of those reasons to do podcasting, because it's great for SEO and great for showing up in LLM-based search tools.
Well, and see, I've already learned something else new.
I can add that to the stack. What are the challenges functionally that you have seen in your process? Obviously, I did 142 podcast interviews in the last year, so I have my own perspective. I'm curious, what's been your experience as far as friction or difficulties or challenges? And, you know, grade them on a scale as far as difficulty. I don't think, from my own personal opinion, there's nothing that's insurmountable, but what are the friction points to podcasting?
There's nothing difficult about podcasting. Practicing law is difficult. Podcasting is just having a conversation. So I don't think there's anything difficult about podcasting. I often get asked, tell me your three biggest mistakes. I'm like, with one exception, I've never made a mistake. And I say that because everything I have done, I've learned from in podcasting. I came to it late in life. I had an open mind. I realized if I did a crappy interview, that was on me. I wasn't prepared. I wasn't focused. You know, what did I need to do to make the interview better? If the audio was a problem, that was something I needed to solve. Now, I did make one mistake once. But every podcaster makes that mistake, and you only make it once. And it's the following. Forget to hit the record button. And you only make it once. One time I flew to Boston to interview a Harvard professor. I had a great 3-hour interview. And at the end, I was wrapping up and I looked down. I went, why is that red light not on? And yeah. So, but I learned. I double check. I look and see, is the timer going? Is it saying record? And Riverside's great because it has a little record button right in the middle. So I can look up there and say, yes, we're recording at the time. But yeah, everything I've done has been a learning experience. You know, crummy cover art. Well, who's that on? Not good show notes. Not good SEO. That's all on me. And every time I have done something that was needed improvement, I took the opportunity to learn to improve it. Now, I do 6 to 8 pods a day, so I'm rocking and rolling. And if there was a friction point, it was I get up very early and I go to bed very late. But that's my choice. I want to crank that many out, and that's just the way I'm wired. So it's not a friction point. It's just I choose to work that hard because I want to be the best I can be.
I did 4 podcasts yesterday. And I was pretty tired. 6 to 8, that's probably a heavy lift even for me. And I do love this. I do love having those conversations. So definitely mad respect. But I don't think, you know, the advice is for everybody to go and commit themselves to 6 or 8 podcasts. What would you say is kind of a general cadence or style or approach as far as level of commitment or difficulty when it comes to like an SMB or a small business owner looking to do this? Like, what level do you get value and where is the next tier of that value?
So the most important thing on cadence is set your audience expectation and then meet it. If you say, I'm going to podcast twice a month, you podcast twice a month. Doesn't mean you can't podcast more. If you podcast once a month, you run into the problem, are they going to remember me month to month? Now, if you have such a unique show, like I have one show where I interview a magazine editor once a month, and it literally is a monthly wrap-up of what was in the magazine. And that's the way we pitch it. And people will wait, you know, for that wrap-up to go back and look at the back issues. but it's set your audience's expectation and meet it. I tell most business owners, start with two. You can easily move to four. It's much more difficult to move from four to two because you are seen as less serious. But if you start with two, that's 2 hours a month. Everybody has 2 hours a month. And if you don't, make it. And then if you want to own your space, you can do that in the podcast arena. And you do it by starting a daily show. On what topic? It doesn't matter. Period. I got this idea. I have a good friend who went to Indiana University, and he's a rabid Indiana basketball fan. And he had four college buddies that they would get together and talk about each game after the game, and listening to it on the radio. Well, then they decided, well, let's do a podcast. And they just, you know, started up kind of a game wrap-up podcast. Well, it was so popular, he decided, I'm going to do a daily Indiana basketball show. Well, I'm not an Indiana basketball guy. And that, to me, is very niche. And I have zero interest in it. But for his audience, it works.
Yeah.
And so, in my realm of compliance, I just started a daily compliance show. 5 minutes, four stories. And every day, I have two dailies. It's one of the two. And that's the one where people say, you're in my head every morning. Because people will listen to my news show to get on the way to work or to get some highlights or some thoughts. I even talked to a journalist yesterday who told me he gets his stories listening to my podcast about the news, which just flummoxed me, but I was pretty happy. And then, so I own that. And somebody asked me that question once in a podcast conference. He goes, well, I have a podcast on PTSD for Iraq veterans. I said, there is nothing more perfect than that topic. You just pick out three stories and you give it 5 minutes and you will own that space for your audience. To the point where last summer I got interested in AI for legal and regulatory compliance. And I had the bright idea, well, you know, I got this daily news show. Why don't I do a daily AI news show? Well, there are a ton of daily AI news shows. But once again, I kept that format 5 minutes, but I focused on using AI and compliance. I'm now in the top 100 in 40 countries in technology for that show. And I wish I could recreate it. I wish I could tell you why. All I can tell you is it works. But the other thing is I have upped my own game around AI just by reading about what other people are doing. And so it's made me much better at that, just as the Daily Compliance News show made me a much better compliance professional. So I feel like I've gotten as much out of it as my audience has.
I'm curious, how do you see the difference, or is there a difference between an interview-based podcast and an individual, like setting time aside, generating notes and, you know, weeding through a script or, you know, improvising for 5 minutes? What's your take on those two classes of podcasting?
So it really depends on the individual podcaster. I tried, when I started, I thought it was going to be Tom pontificating into a camera. And I've watched some of those now. They're very difficult to watch. Very difficult. So I quickly gravitated to the interview style, like we're doing. And I found, as a lawyer, I was trained professionally. I'm a recovering trial lawyer, so I interview, interrogate, cross-examine, whatever you want to call it, people. So I was very comfortable in that format. And pretty quickly, I realized I'm not here to cross-examine. I'm not here to gotcha. I'm here to celebrate. I'm here to celebrate you. I'm here to celebrate Jeremy. I'm here to celebrate what you're doing and what you're bringing to the table. And that's how I pitch all of my interviews. It really depends on your individual style. Now, once again, on the news shows, it's 3 to 5 minutes, so I do that myself on my two news shows, the compliance news and the AI news. I can't really talk 30 minutes straight on one topic without having to read something, and I hate reading off a teleprompter, so that's really not suited to my skill set anymore. So the interview format is 99% of what I do, with the exception of the daily. If I have anything under 10 minutes, I'm much more comfortable with just sort of chatting, but anything longer than that, I typically will have an interview.
Love it. All right. I'm going to give you a soapbox, and you can choose to stand up on it and sound off on something that you're passionate about and that you wish that more people knew about.
Well, it's the following. I grew up in an age from the 80s where NPR was one of the top radio stations in America, and every large city, and I lived in Houston, so we had our, you know, NPR affiliate from one of the universities. And part of what NPR brought to all of us was localized storytelling and just that. Tell some story in an audio format on the radio, and it can be a wonderful way to consume information. There was a radio host in the 60s that I listened to because my dad listened to who did that. He told stories on the radio. So I really liked that format. Well, with the cuts from the Trump administration, NPR is contracting, and it's not going out to rural areas, places like where I live, and getting those stories. Now, our closest NPR TV and radio station is San Antonio, and I think they're still doing that in San Antonio, but I live 70 miles from San Antonio. They're not coming out here. And so what I see is a real need and a real opportunity for people like us. Where in Tennessee do you live?
I'm in Cookeville, Tennessee, so about an hour out of Nashville.
My best friend in the world is from Cookeville.
Well,
there you go. Both sides of his family have been there for 100 years. So born in Cookeville. Anyway, we'll talk about that later. Cookville is perfect. I know the stories from Cookeville, or I did, because I used to go up and see his family farm and all of that stuff. And so Cookeville is a perfect example. There are stories to tell in Cookeville. And if I just told my friend you were from Cookeville, he would give you both sides of the family to go tell, get stories from. But those stories matter. And they are great storytelling. We're preserving a part of Americana. And we're filling a market need because of a niche that got taken away from us. So I'm speaking at South by Southwest next month in Austin. And I'm going to start trying to communicate to people like us. Start telling local stories, because the big national outlets that used to tell those stories, largely NPR, are not doing it anymore. And there's a real need. And I think there's an opportunity for people like us to create something in rural communities that can be very powerful, useful, and a ton of fun.
Love that. That's perfect. And a great tie in to the end of the segment. Give people a way to connect with you. How can they find you, learn a little bit more about what you're doing, and if they want to connect and work with you?
Sure. I'm on LinkedIn, Thomas R. Fox. I have two podcast networks, the Compliance Podcast Network, www.compliancepodcastnetwork.net. You can leave a message there. You can leave a voicemail there. My rural network is the Texas Hill Country Podcast Network.com. And you can also leave a message there, or you can email me at tfox@tfoxlaw.com. I'd love to talk to you about your journey in podcasting.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.